Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's January 25th, 1987. The score of Super Bowl 21 between the New York Giants and Denver Broncos sits at a scorching 10-9. A riveting halftime show featuring George Burns, Mickey Rooney, and the USC marching band has just concluded when America's favorite spokesman, Joe Isuzu, appears on the TV screen. He sits in front of a bright red pickup truck filled with 500 pounds of bananas and proceeds to make an excellent case for why Americans should purchase an all-new Isuzu Pup.
About $6.
Viewers laughed, cheered even. Americans love Joe Isuzu. And the car manufacturer's balance sheet reflected that. 1986 was Isuzu's best sales year ever in North America. And it seemed that Joe and his lineup of unique cars were giving the big Japanese manufacturers like Toyota and Honda a run for their money. But unfortunately for fans of the plucky underdog, this was not the case. Sales of Isuzu vehicles were plummeting, and 20 years later, the company officially punted on selling cars in the U.S. Today on Pass Gas, what the heck happened to Isuzu? How could a company that built such a strong foothold in pop culture during the 80s and 90s become such a failure in the 2000s? And where are they now? The answers to those questions are as winding as its namesake, Japan's Isuzu River. This is the rise and fall of Isuzu.
I want to know who in 1987 was like, hey, let's get, you know, George Burns, like one of the top country artists of this of this year, and let's also get the guy who did Yellowface from Breakfast at Tiffany's. That's gonna be a great Super Bowl halftime show.
You know what we're
show.
Gonna do? We're gonna mix that with a marching band from an elite private college. That'll really speak to middle America.
Yeah, now I'm getting into it.
Welcome back to Pass Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. Across from me is Justin Freeman.
Hello.
And Joe Weber, what's up?
My new name is Joe Isuzu. What's it going to take to get you in a new rodeo?
Does a new rodeo exist?
No, this is me in 1987.
Oh.
Today we're talking to Isuzu. Justin and I yesterday, just some inside baseball, inside donut for you guys. We just got done filming an episode of Free Ride, which will be coming out on Friday of this week. If you're hearing this on Monday, it'll be out on Friday. So no spoilers, Justin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a spoiler for you, though. I am worn out. I'm tired.
Yeah.
We built the car on Tuesday. And then yesterday, on Wednesday, we went out and tested it. It performed flawlessly.
It did really good. I'm actually kind of jealous.
It's pretty sweet.
Is that a spoiler in itself?
No.
Not really.
I'm just saying, like,
there's a lot to unpackage there.
What I'm saying is we probably could have built the car on one day, maybe taken a break, and then tested it another day.
Yeah. That's not how it works here at Donut.
Dude, it was like 100 degrees out at Hungry Valley. We're sweating our little tushes off. Justin, how do you feel?
I feel great.
Oh, good.
Because I got to play lead host.
Oh, that's right.
And
oh,
game master.
Cool. Game master for both.
And honestly, the drill sergeant kind of came out in me.
Plus, you did a tour in Egypt, so like the desert thing is not a factor to you.
I didn't know I had it in me, but I was putting pressure on that
dude.
Wow. That's right. I think you and I had some different experiences then. When we were building the truck, you were wrenching a little bit.
Well, this might be getting a little too much into it, but yes, I did. That's how I cut my finger.
I did.
Oh, man.
You helped me put the rear suspension in, which was a lot. And then Jerry and I put the tent on the truck.
Yeah, I helped you pick that truck. up, but I also helped with the winch and the bumper.
Dude, I was just, that's right. Dude, I was so freaking sore, man. It was crazy. And then, yesterday was insane.
Yeah. So this seems like a different version of Free Ride than I know.
Oh, it's a completely different setup.
I'm so excited to see this now.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
The contestant was a really good dude. He really cool story. So keep your eyes out for that one on Friday. Free ride. Excuse me. Free ride. Free ride.
Normally, I'm not jealous of another man's muscles, but that dude's chest.
Really? He got the big pillows?
Quite barrel chested. Well, barrel. A little background. Danny, the contestant, he is like a metal worker, an iron worker is what he said. He like works building skyscrapers and like big buildings and stuff with rebar and welding and all that kind of stuff. So
he's just lifting I-beams over his head.
For real. Pretty much. Like, geez, the dude's joke. Anyway, we won't say anything more. You got to check it out on Friday. Free ride. It's a good time.
And when you guys were doing that, I was doing the interview of a lifetime.
Oh, that's
I got
right.
to interview Jay Leno at his garage.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was super cool. This is already old news at this point when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
Because it was for Big Three that is happening next week, which is
like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago when you hear this, 2 weeks ago when you hear this. Time dilation, people.
But man, that dude
was
that
fun? Was that a good time?
I don't even have to say this, but that guy is such a pro.
Mm-hmm.
Way that he telegraphs, like he's so accommodating in every part of his life, including like interviewing, like he can telegraph to you when he's kind of wrapping up a sentence and then he starts to look at you and then he finishes that sentence and that cues you to ask another sentence or your question.
Wow.
It was so cool, man. I learned so much just by like sitting next to him and asking him
questions. There's almost like there's an art form to this.
Oh, yeah.
Definite skill.
How close did you get to him?
I mean, I shook his hand. My knee was almost touching his knee.
I was crammed in a small three-wheeler with him.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
And he's bigger than you think. He's bigger. Like, I thought he was going to be like 5'6".
Yeah.
But he's like maybe an inch smaller than me.
Yeah. Was that your first time at his garage?
Yeah. Dude, that's insane, too. That's just like endless back rooms of cars.
And it's not just like one thing.
No.
You know, he has so many
cool things.
Tastes in there. Like, it's like there's just a Miata.
A lot
in
of
there.
Tchotchkes, too.
Oh, his a clean Miata. A
really nice
like
Miata.
What looks to be like a little,
I think it's supercharged.
Dam or something like.
Yeah, yeah.
It has, aftermarket.
It looks well driven, too.
So I was surprised at my favorite car in there. I knew his favorite car was the 1928 Walker Duesenberg Coupe, $30 million car. And I was like, man, this thing is sick. But my favorite car was the Hemi Coronet in the corner. That thing is.
Is that the green one?
So nice.
Is it green?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the perfect shade of green. It's sitting next to a Cyclone also. Mm-hmm. Like, so cool. Yeah.
Super sick. Super sick. And Audrey got to go, right?
Yeah. Audrey. Hell yeah. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Crash of the gig.
Hell yeah. The crew went, so I'm very happy for that. Podcast crew finally getting into the garage.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you guys what your perception of, Justin, we'll start with you, what your perception of Isuzu was. Last time you were on the show, you had just bought the Isuzu Impulse.
Yes.
Let's get into that a little bit, why you chose that car, but also your perception of the brand maybe before you bought the car and since you bought the car.
Well, I haven't driven it, so not much has changed. But so before purchasing the car, there was nothing really from Isuzu that I really wanted besides maybe a cab over, you know, truck.
Yeah.
A ramp truck, maybe, you know, because that's what they were known for, commercial vehicles and whatnot. But the Impulse specifically, Giorgetto Giugiaro designed it.
Yeah.
And that immediately was just like, I love this thing.
The designer of the century.
Designer of the century, designer of my Subaru SVX.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Designer of the DeLorean.
Mark 1 Golf.
Yeah. And Isuzu essentially told him, make your favorite car. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. Awesome. He made his signature design with this car. And I love it. It's rear wheel drive. It's manual. They came with a turbo later. It's very 80s.
Mm-hmm. Very 80s.
Eyebrow pop-up lights, not a full flip.
Yeah, those are
really
sick.
Cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Interior is like amazing.
Wait, what do you mean by eyebrow pop-up lights?
So instead of it tucking away and folding up, they just lift.
Oh.
So it's just almost doing like this. It's really funny.
Almost like the squirters that come out of your hood sometimes.
Kind
of,
yeah. I'm not like an Isuzu diehard. It's specifically this car because we'll probably get into this later. What happens with the Isuzu is they just get connected to other manufacturers.
They're like the Busta Rhymes of car companies. They're always featured.
I was trying to think of like band analogies, you know, like, you know, your Toyotas and your Honda, that's like, the Rolling Stones and or like
the Beatles.
The Beatles, like, okay, yeah, classic standbys. Yeah. Then you got like your Subaru and your Mazda, which I think back in the 90s, especially in early 2000s, even the 80s, 90s, like that was like your radio heads. It's like, okay, you got to dig a little deeper, you know, it's like, but it's like not that deep because like, you know, Kid A is like pretty listenable, you know, or like In Rainbow is very accessible.
It's not for everyone, but it is like zeitgeist.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. Right. It's influencing. And then you have your Isuzus and like your Daihatsus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where
they manufacture like crazy.
Yeah.
And they develop things. And that's why they get picked up by other bigger brands.
That's almost like a Willie Nelson who you're like, oh, he wrote that song? He didn't make it popular, but like he wrote that song.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo. So yeah, I'm really excited to finally get it driving. I dropped the tank.
Oh yeah.
It's been sitting for a very long time.
It does not look good.
So.
We were showing the writer yesterday, this writer that came in to have lunch with us. Mm. And I opened up the little fuel door. Like, just see the ground. I was like, what's going on with this?
But luckily Isuzu didn't change much.
Yeah.
So like there's a lot of parts still available.
Hell yeah.
Except that's awesome. The gas tank.
I'm excited for your journey.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get into our journey here with the story of Isuzu.
Woo!
The early 1900s were a time in Japan when several different companies with experience manufacturing everything from boats to looms and textiles decided to dip into the vehicle manufacturing market, or the auto industry. In 1916, the Tokyo Ishikawajima Shipbuilding and Engineering Company decided to make landfall, adding cars to its successful shipbuilding enterprise. In 1918, TSAC partnered with Wolseley Motors.
Wolseley.
Sounds Canadian.
The largest motor car building company in Britain.
Close.
British Columbia. Given them exclusive rights to the production and sales of Wolseley vehicles in East Asia, which they assembled from knockdown kits. But a few years later, disaster struck the mainland of Japan. In 1923, the Great Kanto earthquake led to a seismic shift in the country, both for its literal geography, but also its transportation infrastructure.
I love double entendres.
Whoa.
The devastating 7.9 magnitude earthquake caused subsequent landslides, tsunamis, firestorms, and fire whirls all over the countryside.
That's like a fire tornado?
Yes.
Whoa.
Twisting and destroying the rail systems and rendering the nation's primary form of transportation essentially useless for recovery efforts.
Segway, have you played Helldivers?
I'm resistant because I know I'm going to get sucked into it.
Okay. It just sounds like Hellmire.
Essentially, you're just fighting bugs and robots, right?
Yeah.
But there's like a storm system where fire tornadoes show up, making the whole experience even worse.
Why are we fighting for this planet that has regular fire tornadoes?
Exactly.
This is stupid. The thing is, though, when God closes a train station, he opens up a truck stop. That's what Grandma said. General Motors and Ford sent heavy trucks from the U.S. to aid in Japan's recovery and reconstruction. And Ishikawajima Shipbuilding contributed what it could. More importantly, designers and engineers at the company were finally able to study the formidable American vehicles up close.
Ooh.
By 1927, TSEC, or Tokyo
Ishikawajima
Shipbuilding Enterprise Company, had gathered enough experience to know how to leave the nest and begin manufacturing vehicles of its own design, ending its partnership with Wolseley.
Oh no, Wolseley!
A new era was dawning on the passenger car side as well. As roads replaced the railways throughout the country after the earthquake, more and more people were being exposed to the speedy, convenient, and autonomous form of transportation. Both government agencies and private businesses began purchasing cars for their top people to use. Recognizing opportunity in the sea change, TSEC, or the Tokyo Ishikawajima Shipbuilding Enterprise and Company, split off from its car division as a separate company. Now, it was the Ishikawajima Motor Works Company.
Whoa.
IMW.
1933 was a huge year for the Ishimotor Works. Fine. I like saying it. Ishikawajima. How could you not?
It is satisfying.
Ishikawajima. They launched its first government standard model car called the Isuzu.
Whoa.
Named after the river that flowed past one of Japan's most sacred shrines. It also began producing the Sumida, named after a different river that flowed past a different sacred shrine, which was an armored vehicle that was unique because its six wheels could be changed out to either ride on train tracks or drive over ground terrain.
That's awesome.
Later models of the Sumida were used by the Japanese Army and Navy.
There's a YouTuber that drives one of these, like a little car that can go on rail tracks through the desert, and he'll go on all these like day-long adventures. And
it was is it Preston Goes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy's love great. That dude.
Yeah, he's really good. And as if two monumental vehicle drops weren't enough, they also established a company specializing in what is still the foundation of Isuzu to this day, the development of diesel engines. By 1936, Auto Industries Company had developed two diesel engines, the DA4 and the DA6, which are the basis for all future Isuzu-produced diesel engines. They were the iPhone 1 of diesel engines, as far as Isuzu is concerned.
So they weren't the people who made the cell phone. They're the ones who made a really good cell phone.
Or even better, Mazda didn't make the rotary.
Right.
They perfected the rotary.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Right?
Oh, dude, the Jay Winkle had an amazing Cosmos. Is that what it's called?
Oh, the four rotor?
The original Mazda rotary.
Yeah.
It's so clean. So cool,
that's
man.
Cool that he has that. To learn more about Mazda, check out our 4-part history on Mazda.
Oh, that is a good plug.
Mm-hmm. 1937 marked the final merger of companies with captivating names when Automobile Industries joined with Tokyo Gas and Electric to form Tokyo Automotive Industries Company, which the Isuzu Corporation recognizes as its official inception. For the next 2.5 decades, Isuzu established itself as the commercial truck, bus, and diesel engine manufacturing company in Japan. During World War II, they supplied vehicles to their country's own military, updated versions of the Sumida, and the versatile TX-40 and TX-80 heavy trucks, which were used as fire trucks, tank trucks, dump trucks, and more. In the early 50s, the tables had turned, and they provided vehicles to the United States during the Korean War. The company name was officially changed to Isuzu in 1949.
Was it Datsun we were doing last time? They also just kept changing names, more mergers, more name changes.
Yeah, that's a theme with all Japanese companies, is like they're always merging. Mm. They're always like working with outside companies. I mean, apart from like during the war.
Right.
But the names are like most of what we talk about are how they merge names and stuff.
It's
like
so
that.
Much better than what like Stellantis.
I know. I'm so sick of fake words.
Yeah.
Like for car names and shit like that.
Or just hospitals. Like, I think the hospital.
Hospitals.
Yeah. Where I'm from, this one hospital company decided to start buying all the Eastern North Carolina hospitals, and they created Vidant Health. Mm. And it was like,
yeah. It sounds nice. In 1959, Isuzu launched Japan's first fully cab-over engine truck, the 2-ton ELF, quickly became a bestseller in Japan. Originally only available with the 1.5-liter petrol engine with 60 metric horsepower, so probably like 59 horsepower, it vaguely resembled the already popular VW bus. And 7 generations later, the ELF, the ELF, holds the number one share in the domestic light utility market today.
Whoa.
Because of its versatility as a standard truck, box, or flatbed. In the U.S., they're also rebadged as the W Series for Chevrolet and GMC.
Already starting.
There you go. There you go. Oh, yeah. You see these things everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
They're very inconspicuous, but you'll probably see an Isuzu on your drive today if you live in a city.
Yeah, but it won't be badged, Isuzu. Yeah.
3 decades in, the Japanese auto industry still wasn't geared towards private individuals and was almost exclusively utilized by companies, government agencies, or for public transportation in the form of cabs and buses. But that was about to change.
What?
Yeah. We'll be right back after this.
By the late 1950s, Japan was experiencing its first extended stretch of stability in decades. The post-World War II economy had finally recovered, and Japanese citizens, especially influenced by American consumerism, were ready to hit the roads. With its commercial business humming, Isuzu's designers were like a middle-aged dad who decided to dust off his old guitar, turning their attention towards the exciting world of passenger vehicles. In 1961, Isuzu independently designed and produced its first passenger vehicle, the Bilel, which was also Japan's first diesel-powered passenger car. The Japanese tradition of high quality and deep meaning extended to the name. Isuzu means 50 bells in reference to the 50 bells of the Ise Grand Shrine, which the Isuzu River flows past. So Bell-El was a combination of Bell and the letter L, which is Roman numeral for 50.
Hmm.
That's deep.
Dude, follow the numbers.
The Bell-El was Japan's first sedan with a 2-liter engine, which engineers hoped would make it stand out against its competitors at Toyota and Nissan. It did win the Japan Society of Mechanical Engineers Award in 1962, praised as a product of, quote, unique and excellent engineering.
Oh.
However, the Bell-El failed to catch on with consumers. Initial production was slow and many issues were reported. Plus, Isuzu didn't market to Japan's road-hungry citizens, selling most of the first run to its existing commercial and government clientele.
Hmm.
But once they did get their hands on the wheel, passengers were just not fans of the noisy, vibrating diesel engines, which turned every ride into mini Kanto earthquake.
Too soon?
Oh, man. On a side note, I felt an earthquake the other day.
So I was at a falconry class.
What? What? I just casually dropped
on
that.
On Sunday. It was great.
Whoa.
We're sitting there playing with these birds of prey.
Yeah.
And an earthquake just happens.
Yeah. Did they freak out?
No. No one really noticed.
Birds are like in the air. Birds probably don't notice it.
Yeah.
One lady felt it. I heard it. I just heard like a boom.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was like construction down the street. And then everyone was just kind of like, huh, what was that? And then someone pulled up the app and it was just like, oh, yeah, there was a 3.5 or something that just happened in LA. And it was like, oh, cool. And what if just moved on with our day.
What if you found out too late that like when falcons feel earthquakes, they like gouge people's eyes out?
Their natural reaction. Just to disfigure the nearest human. The only way they can cope.
So basically these like kind of unreliable diesel engines would become Isuzu's identity, like a nasty baseball pitch that just misses the strike zone. Their designs and engineering were exciting in theory, but slightly off target in their execution. In 1964, Isuzu launched the Bellet GT featuring a 1.6-liter single overhead cam petrol engine. It was the first Japanese car to wear a GT badge.
Hmm.
A later model, the GT Type R, was featured in the Gran Turismo PlayStation games.
I like the transition from Bell-El to
Bellet. Yeah, that's like the tiny, smaller, maybe feminine version.
I don't know.
It's a little sleeker.
Dude, this thing's sick
as
hell.
It's a little sleeker.
Oh,
it's nice.
My God, I want this. I want it.
Oh,
I
yeah.
need it.
But Isuzu models were barely competing with their contemporaries like the massively popular Toyota Corolla and the Mazda Carol.
Carol?
I think we mentioned it in the Mazda episode. So in 1968, the top brass at 50 bells brought in a ringer. But not just any ringer. The future car designer of the century.
Uh-oh.
Aforementioned Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Giorgetto.
I still don't know if we're saying it right.
I don't know.
We've seen it, said it a million times. Could be Giugiaro.
Giorgetto. Giugiaro might be how you say it.
Basically, we'll just call him Tiny George because that's what it means in Italian.
Nice.
Oh, Tiny George.
At only 30 years old, Italian designer Tiny George was already a legend. His resume to that point included designs for 5 Alfa Romeos, the Aston Martin DB4 GT Bertone,
damn,
Jet, 2 Ferraris, 2 Fiats, 2 Maseratis, and 2 Simcas, because doubles are good, triples are better.
This guy's was the Cody Ko of car design. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wait, no,
he's
sorry.
The Tiger Woods of car design.
I don't even know if that reference is a good reference, too. Unless Tiger Woods won 2 of every competition.
No, I think it's because Tiny George was running from his wife who smashed his car windows in with a golf club. Nice timely reference for you.
For Isuzu, Tiny George designed the 117 Coupe. The rear-wheel drive fastback was beautiful, but since it was essentially handmade, production was extremely slow, and very few of them were actually sold.
This isn't a Isuzu, man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looks insane. Looks Italian.
Bro.
That's why they went to designer of the century.
Yeah. Having been sidelined for a few years since working on the Bell-El, the boys in Diesel were eager for some action. So a few variations into its existence, the 117 became the first diesel-powered sports car, which is also awesome. That's a flex.
Not as cool anymore.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's a cool, like, cool on paper.
Diesel-powered sports car? Yeah, it's
interesting.
Have you driven one of those diesel turbo BMWs?
No.
They're awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had a buddy that used to do, like, the... not smog, but he would take all the, you know, filters and crazy stuff out. He would take all the emission stuff out of it, and it would just turn it into like a fun turbo car. It drove like you would expect a regular turbo car, but it was diesel.
Yeah.
So you got 50 to the gallon.
And it was super torquey.
And you had all the fun turbo noises and everything. Whoa. So it's like, don't sleep on diesel sports cars. I don't know why there aren't more of them.
Yeah. Big petrol. This coupe's bottom line was a familiar one for Isuzu. Exciting design, but sales remained lackluster. And although Isuzu was a recognized leader in the truck market, its rapid development of new models in all sectors had left it financially weakened. Things were bad enough that the company attempted to broker partnerships with Subaru, Mitsubishi, and Nissan in order to steady the ship. But all three deals fell through. It was looking like Isuzu might have to retire from the race until the 11th hour when an American behemoth swooped in.
Okay, back to the diesel sports car thing. Yeah. Why aren't there more of them?
Yeah.
Just before we move on, I'm going to lay out why I think that's not the case. That big petrol. Guys, the petrol companies make the diesel.
Yeah.
That's not the way. I think it's because for decades in the States, like, diesel engines were heavy duty, right? That's like what you have in your big trucks. If you got to tow like a horse trailer or a race trailer or whatever you need,
yeah,
get some work done. I just feel like that connotation after like decades of consumer training, basically, you're telling people that this is meant for only work. And then you're going to try to sell a small car, like a luxury car, like a BMW with a diesel, even though it makes sense over in Europe. Over here, people are like, what, like a truck motor in my car? That's not how that works.
Ottawa truck motor in my car.
The market water, like in I don't the think toilet? It
took off here because the market training like that. Also, I just don't think diesels sound as good as gas engines. And I think that counts for a lot.
I kind of like a turbo diesel.
It's like like Harley guys, man. Like, not everyone likes a Harley because it's so loud and vibrate-y.
Maybe you just don't like whistle tones.
I just think, like, would you rev if you want a sports car, half of it is about the noise, right? Yeah. Like, you want that. Like that nice noise.
Yeah.
Diesels don't necessarily have
that. Have you driven a small diesel?
I think once. But again, it's a BMW you're talking about, right? Like a diesel.
It's a straight six turbo diesel.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound the same. And you're only revving to like 3,500.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, probably redlines at like four.
Probably four, yeah. So I just, I think that's why. I don't think it's any like malicious conspiracy. I just think people.
Oh,
like,
no, it's entirely marketing.
Yeah. It's market.
Yeah.
Not just marketing, but the market itself.
Yes.
You want your sports car to scream, and when it's going,
I don't know. When it's taking off on the line,
I know.
It's
got
super tall gearing.
I'm not as opposed to it as
sounds pretty sick.
And looking at the list of
I'm not opposed to it either. I was looking at diesel X5s before I got my pickup truck.
Oh, diesel X5 would actually be a good application of that.
As a towing rig, but
yeah,
I didn't go to it. In 1971, the Japanese government made the momentous decision to allow foreign companies to make direct capital investments in their auto industry. And America's big three immediately pulled out their checkbooks. Chrysler bought a 35% minority stake in Mitsubishi, and Ford bought into Mazda. GM made the same arrangement with Isuzu, buying a 34.2% stake for $56 million, almost $400 million today.
It's a good investment.
Isuzu was the smallest of Japan's seven major car manufacturers and sixth for trucks and buses. So it may have been a surprise to some that the largest manufacturer in the world would pick them as their inroad to East Asia. But GM had been working closely with Isuzu since the mid-20s, since that earthquake recovery. After 30 years of dating, GM chairman at the time, James Roche, and Isuzu president, Toreo Aramaki, finally made things official. Nice.
Nice. Finally.
Good for them.
Oh,
they were like dating other people.
Yeah, they had this like civil, what's it called when you live with your girlfriend for 7 years?
Civil partnership.
Civil partnership.
No, that's not how it is.
Just put a ring on
domestic
it.
Domestic partnership.
Domestic partnership.
Yeah. The deal stipulated that Isuzu produced two vehicles for GM to sell in the U.S. The first of these was the Isuzu Faster. rebadged in the U.S. as the Chevy Love Truck.
I love the Love Truck.
Mm-hmm.
Ishad Ware has one of the coolest collections mm-hmm. of cars. He's got that Beamer that BMW actually like restored nuts and bolts. But then he wanted to put an LS in his Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he might have. And he said it was like scary.
Yeah.
Because it's tiny.
That's like building a drag car. Basically,
in a go kart,
yeah, tiny ass truck, huge ass engine. You're gonna make some skid marks.
Yeah, in your pants.
Yes.
Chevy Love had a heavy emphasis on light. Okay, it had a 1.8 liter, 75 horsepower, four cylinder engine with 88 foot pounds of shrub-bullin' torque.
Shrub-bullin'.
Quote, Isuzu's finest was a paragon of pint-sized practicality. It sold 100,000 units by the end of 1972, doubling Isuzu's export volume. So
that
it was
means
a big
there's
success.
Some out there if I want to grab one.
They're around. In 1974, Isuzu produced the Gemini, a rear-wheel drive subcompact based on another GM car, the Opel Kadett, which is a European model car. But the car developed an identity crisis upon its move to the U.S. Designed by German Opel, produced by Japanese Isuzu, and sold by American Buick, it seems the marketing team had a party to get to after the naming meeting since they branded it the Buick Opel Isuzu. Most of the four-door sedans were driven by the 1.8-liter 4B F1 diesel engine, while the sportier two-door coupes ran with the 1.6-liter G16-1Z inline-four gasoline engine. Never heard of either of those. I'm sure they were great. Due to rising fuel costs, the low-power BOI, Buick, Opel, Isuzu, and diesel-powered Love Truck initially performed well in the U.S. against their physically larger competitors at Toyota, Datsun, and Volkswagen. But Isuzu's fortunes pulled a U-turn thanks to the 1979 energy crisis when the playing field was leveled and tastes in the U.S. began moving away from low-powered trucks. Production declined steadily until 1981.
I do like that it's B-O-I, like little boy.
Boy. I'm just now realizing when we were doing our music or band analogy.
Yeah.
I forgot Nissan.
Oh, Nissan's like Drake.
Think
just
Drake?
Like super commercial, collaborates with everyone, is kind of like cheap.
Yeah, but they're not super commercially successful right now. But well, in the mid-90s and 2000s, I guess they were. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you agree with that analogy or no?
Yes, I agree. He had his time in the late 2000s.
Yeah, when he was good.
Yeah, and then he just started coasting.
Yeah.
We're taking a side.
Yeah.
It's 2 months after the fact. We're finally putting our foot down.
It's time to keep the lights on, so we'll be right back after this message. Isuzu sputtered into the decades of excess. Chairman T. Okamoto was feeling very out of sync with his partners at GM, and they were limiting Isuzu's access to their top investors' vast resources. Isuzu desired to spread its wings and develop new vehicles, but this wasn't a priority for GM, who preferred to keep Isuzu cooped up in the steady commercial sector where it had been successful. So in 1981, the company made a bold move and established its own dealer network in the U.S., which technically would directly compete with GM at the wholesale level. This ruffled the feathers of GM CEO Roger Smith. In a landmark meeting in 1981, Smith announced that Isuzu had lost its favor as a global partner with GM. Not exactly the attitude you want from the investor who controls over a third of your company.
Ooh.
To exert its power further, Smith asked Okamoto to help GM buy a stake in Honda, Japan's most rapidly growing car manufacturer. But Honda was doing fine on its own and rebuffed GM's advances, a giant what-if for the car industry. GM bought a small stake in Suzuki as a consolation. Does that make sense? Ultimately, the aggressive move by Okamoto resulted in Isuzu playing a larger role in GM's international plans, opening production facilities in the UK and Australia. And in the US, Isuzu would finally get the recognition it had been seeking for years, thanks to an unlikely figure. In the early 1960s, a brash young ad man from Brooklyn named Jerry Famina marched into a meeting at Ted Bates & Co. advertising agency in Midtown Manhattan. Jerry had been hired to breathe some life into the stodgy joint. And in this brainstorm meeting for a little Japanese electronics company called Panasonic, he certainly prompted some gasps. His first suggestion for a headline? From those wonderful folks who brought you Pearl Harbor.
Jesus Christ, dude.
What?
Wow. That's pretty brash. The WW2 vets tipped out of their chairs.
That's pretty crazy, dude.
But Jerry was an out-of-the-box thinker, and stunts like that earned him the nickname the Madman of Madison Avenue.
Oh, baby.
He's like Don Draper.
Yeah.
Yep.
Later, his firm, Della Famina and Travisano and Partners, was responsible for several iconic ad campaigns, including the jingle for Meow Mix.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I saw, what is the, like, fancy? Oh, Fancy Feast. I saw,
it's like a feast for cats, it's kind of fancy.
Yeah, it's cats eat it. I saw a Fancy Feast commercial yesterday waiting at CarMax, and it's disgusting. It's so gross when they just like show a chef putting together like this like pate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And now they have liquid centers, which is even more disgusting.
Yeah. It's so good though. It's like a gusher made of meat.
Oh, man.
What is it, like Vianney sausages? Imagine that. It's like being filled.
Yeah. They basically make that with those cheese-filled hot dogs. I'm just going to say, like, that's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, that is good. But they can't feed cats cheese, so it's literally just like...
No, they hate it.
Meat goo in the middle.
Hey, we eat meat goo. Hot dogs.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
They're
so good. I had two hot dogs yesterday for dinner.
Nice.
So basically, this guy who made the Pearl Harbor joke also wrote a book about the advertising industry, which was a key influence for the show Mad Men.
He basically is Don Draper.
Oh, he is Don Draper. All right. In 1986, Isuzu turned to the Mad Men to give their American business a jumpstart. Della Famina's commercial, DeGrasse, aired, starring one of the most dishonest, unethical pitchmen ever, Joe Isuzu. I'm too young for this. That was the year I was born.
Wow.
To this point, all commercials look the same. Over calming music, relaxed drivers would wind through mountain roads, returning to their cozy homes. Joe Isuzu broke the mold as a satire of the sleazy, grinning car salesman. The agency's first choice for the role was John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live, but ending up selecting actor David Leisure to wear the Joe Isuzu badge.
His name, he could also be a pitchman for like hotels with that name, David Leisure.
Oh, I know. Yeah, missed opportunity. In the commercials, he would make outrageous claims about Isuzu vehicles that they only cost $10.80 or got 300 miles to the gallon, while his line disclaimers flashed at the bottom of the screen.
Okay, it's interesting.
Dealerships worried that Joe was ridiculing the very people responsible for actually selling the cars. But consumers loved the fresh, funny ads, and sales spiked 18% as Joe Isuzu became a household name.
Huh. Nice.
He was the talk of the town after his Super Bowl appearance in 1987, and he became so popular that he starred in cross-promotional ads for Burger King and A&W Root Beer. He even entered politics, though not as a candidate. Michael Dukakis.
Mike Dukakis, baby.
Yeah, accused George Bush of lying like Joe Isuzu during a presidential debate. And later, President Ronald Reagan compared Nicaraguan leader Daniel Ortega to the dishonest huckster.
I just found a Joe Isuzu for president sticker.
Oh.
There you go. Cool.
Yeah, he does look dishonest. Mm-hmm. Cut to a good times montage set to I Feel Love by Donna Summers. Hmm. Isuzu was finally cruising. The Giorgetto Giugiaro designed front engine rear drive impulse earned the reputation as the most fun to drive affordable sports car on the market with its quote suspension by Lotus sticker and variety of four cylinder engines ranging from 2 liters to 2.3, including a 2 liter turbocharged version known as the Impulse RS.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The only one worth money.
It was also called the Piazza in Asia and Europe based off of Giugiaro's concept car, the Asso di Fiore, or Ace of Spades?
The Ace of Spades! The Ace of Spades! Do you know what Piazza means?
Tell you you like Suzu's. I tell you I'm your man. You win some, you lose some. It's all a card of me. Oh, nice, dude. Nice. Bringing it back home with the car reference. What were you saying?
Piazza means plaza, where people come.
Piazza,
something like that.
And plaza means place, I think.
Yeah, it's like place or something stupid like that.
The Trooper was one of the best-selling imported SUVs. The well-reviewed Rodeo appeared in 1988. The Amigo got a shout-out in a Seinfeld episode in 1989. And the good times were off to a rolling.
All right.
Cue screeching brake sound effect. Despite its recognition in pop culture, the uptick in Isuzu sales was only a spike and plateaued by mid-1987.
It happens, man.
They were like the guy at the party making everyone laugh, but can never pull a number. That was me. I hit my stride when I was 29.
That's not true. I don't know if it is.
Yeah, I feel like I'm peaking right now. Maybe.
I think you're still finding your groove, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm having a kid. My sliders are finally biting and actually working.
Nice.
Nice.
Jerry Femina, the father of the campaign, reflected saying, quote, Joe Isuzu made Isuzu a household name, but he became the hero in the ads, and the product has to be the hero. People call me Joe Isuzu about 3 times a week. In 1990, after over 40 commercials, Joe Isuzu was sent to the scrap heap. Isuzu's next ad campaign steered more into their lane with an emphasis on trucks versus cars. One magazine ad for a Trooper read, don't call it a car. It gets mad. This angle worked well for a while.
Did it?
You know I'm born to lose. Suzu's not for fools. That's the way I like it, baby. I don't want to live forever. Nice, dude. And you even got like distortion in the mic to sound like Lemmy. Hell you know, yeah. I met Lemmy once at the Rainbow Room on the Sunset Strip.
I'm out of breath. And what was he like?
He was playing video poker at the end of the bar and no one was talking to him. And I was like, I was waiting for Slash to show up because I had heard that Slash comes to join this jam in the upstairs room at Rainbow Room.
Nice.
And he was not showing up. And I was like, I'm going to go get a beer. And I see Lemmy there and I'm like, whoa, Lemmy, I'm going to go talk to him. And I was like, hey man, big fan. He's like, and then just went back to playing video poker. I was going to make an Ace of Spades joke, but I was like, he's heard this a million times.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
While Isuzu's passenger vehicle business was declining in the U.S., its bread and butter was still commercial truck and engine manufacturing. And by 1990, it had expanded to become the international leader in this category through a number of joint ventures throughout Asia and advancements in engine technology. However, these huge investments meant heavy initial losses, including $500 million in 1991. Uh-huh. So in 92, in an effort to circle the wagon, GM tapped Donald T. Sullivan to be Isuzu's Executive Vice President of Operations. You looked up at me. Do you know that name?
No.
Okay. The highest position ever held in a Japanese auto manufacturer by a non-Japanese speaker. Sullivan's first order of business was to consolidate the company's focus back to what they did best. For the passenger vehicle division, that meant trucks. Luckily, they had an ace up their sleeve. They no longer needed to import brilliant designs from Italy because the prodigal son had returned. But was it too late? Today, Shiro Nakamura is a legend of car design. Known as the father of the SUV crossover, he has received numerous lifetime achievement awards from numerous design organizations, and most prestigious of all, in 2010, he was named one of Fast Company's most creative people in business, just behind Lady Gaga.
What?
I love Lady Gaga, but what the f*** does she know about cameras?
Business?
That's a good quote. Yeah, this might have been before her meat dress.
Mm.
Maybe. But in 1978, Shiro was just a graduate of the Musashino Art University in Tokyo, where he was hired to work for Isuzu. After a few years, he jumped to America to attend the prestigious Art Center College of Design, And in 1985, he joined GM's Advanced Design Studio, then returned to Isuzu in 1989.
Chip Foose graduated from that art designer. Right. Yeah.
For a decade, the, quote, urbane and talkative wonder kid rose through Isuzu's ranks, holding several senior positions when Isuzu produced the Amigo, redesigns of the Trooper and the Gemini. But he is best known for the way ahead of its time, quote unquote, Viacross.
Yeah.
This divisive car.
Yeah.
So Kanye owns three of them.
Does he own three?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It makes sense that a man described as a, quote, dapper, jazz-loving design maestro would be forward-thinking and produce something like this.
When I first got the SVX, there was like one website, the SVX Parts Warehouse or whatever, but it was both the SVX and the Viacross because they were just such weird 90s vehicles. And
it makes
just like,
sense if you had one, you would probably be into the other as well.
Yeah. And this one guy decided to be specific of what he provided for two markets. And it was just one or the other in his website. It was really fun. And that was how I first came across the Viacross.
I wonder if it's the guy that owns a bunch of them in like Altadena.
No. This guy was in Arizona or New Mexico or somewhere.
Shiro was one of the first people to recognize that consumers wanted a vehicle that felt like a car, but drove like a truck.
Mm.
And the Viacross was just that, a vehicle that crossed the two. It was powered in the U.S. market by a 3.5-liter V6 engine, which had an output of 215 horsepower.
It's not bad.
It was highly regarded for its off-road abilities, and Car and Driver described its appearance as a, quote, larger-than-life, self-propelled cartoon character with, quote, little devil's horn projections atop the leering headlamps and the grill having, quote, fangs. The verdict might have made Shiro's Italian predecessor, Giorgetto, or Tiny George, spill his cappuccino. Quote, it's the sexiest Isuzu ever and may well be the sexiest of the sport utility vehicles. But once again, despite intrigue and good press, Isuzu was not moving the needle financially. They only produced 2,500 of the Viacross to be sold in the U.S. Wow, it's not
really.
That's crazy.
I see them a lot.
Yeah.
The midnight, you know, I think that might be because L.A., I feel like, is a hotbed for people who might like that kind of car.
Yeah.
There was one in my old neighborhood in West Adams.
Mm-hmm. Even in North Carolina, I saw them, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Weird.
Well, off-roading's very popular over there, you know, so maybe they can move it over there.
It's so ubiquitous for only having produced 2,500 of them.
Crazy.
That's like a special edition Corvette that you never see.
Yeah. The mid-90s were tough for their other models too, unfortunately. In 96, Consumer Reports issued a, quote, not acceptable safety alert about the Trooper, the best-selling vehicle for Isuzu in the U.S., saying it was too tipsy.
So was everything else.
We did a whole
The Mitsubishi Montero.
That,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From here, Isuzu dealerships began looking like the island of misfit toys. The Trooper was rebadged as a Acura SLX.
What?
The Rodeo was rebadged as a Honda Passport. And then it was a Pilot afterwards. I had one of these passports.
Yeah.
Rodeo. When you move down to LA, you start saying Rodeo.
Yeah. Because we shop there all the time.
Yeah. Good car. Not a lot of aftermarket support for it when I owned it, unfortunately.
I just remember this. So core memory that just popped up. My dad was a huge Trooper fan. We had three at one point.
Whoa.
When I was a baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like the Trooper.
My mom kept hitting deers, though. So
I like the Trooper as well. I want my freaking passport back.
Did you eat the deer or did you just leave them?
No.
Dude, the Trooper is sick. The first ones, ooh-wee. Cool cars.
The round-eye Trooper?
Yeah.
Half door in the back, or it's like a quarter door in the back.
That's cool. In a reverse move, Honda also rebadged their Odyssey as the Isuzu Oasis, and the Chevy Colorado was rebadged as the Isuzu I-280 back over in Japan. The company faced further uncertainty in 1998 due to the economic crisis in Asia, which even threatened its thriving commercial businesses. Isuzu refocused on its diesel engine business in 1999, loosening its grip on Shiro. So after over 25 years working for Isuzu and GM, Shiro left to work with Carlos Ghosn as the lead designer for Nissan.
Oh.
Over the next decade, Nissan would rise to relevance on the roofs of Shiro's iconic designs, groundbreaking cars like the Murano, the Rogue, the Juke, the Infiniti FX, and many non-crossover vehicles like the Cube and the GTR.
Okay.
Wow.
The FX and the GTR are like the only ones that I actually like how they look.
And everyone laughed at the Juke when it came out, and every manufacturer has copied that split-eye design.
Yeah.
True. Shiro rose to become the company's SVP, Senior Vice President, the Chief Creative Officer of Design and Chief Creative Officer of Design and Branding. Ironically, he had become the Don Draper of Nissan.
Who's the Don Draper now?
Oh.
No, that's him asking.
Oh.
You know, that
I did that Joe meme Isuzu. Wrong.
I did that meme wrong, you know, from the Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, I'm the
Don Draper now. Look at me. Sorry. Isuzu entered the new millennium running on fumes. Good analogy. Car related. The company faced financial problems and was forced to restructure, laying off 10,000 employees and relocating principal manufacturing to Thailand.
Huh.
In what would turn out to be its last swing, they produced the Axiom. Based off the Rodeo with a 3.5-liter V6 engine putting out 230 horsepower, it was supposed to replace the Trooper as their flagship vehicle in the U.S.
These things are so interesting looking.
While it did make an appearance in the movie Spy Kids, yep, it didn't perform in the marketplace nearly as well as it did on the big screen, selling only 25,000 units in 3 years. Meanwhile, the Nissan Rogue, designed by their ex, was selling that many cars every month.
Oof.
After pulling the plug on the Axiom in 2004, U.S. Isuzu models were mostly GM rebadges, ending with the Ascender, which is the Chevy Trailblazer. In 2007, Isuzu sold only 7,000 cars in the U.S., 2 per dealership per month. That is rough, dude.
Yeah,
imagine being a salesman.
I think Suzuki was selling better than that.
Yeah. In 2009, they closed all dealerships in the U.S. The river had officially gone dry.
No.
Winding no more.
In the 1920s, Isuzu ascended to prominence out of a disaster. 90 years later, it fell into obscurity after its disastrous Ascender. They had talented individuals creating unique and exciting cars that hit the roads for decades, from the Billet to the Impulse to the Trooper and the Viacross. But in addition to trucks, they were the worldwide leader in bad timing. Even with GM as a backseat driver, they were unable to carve out a niche among their Japanese contemporaries. It's not all bad, though. Today, Isuzu Vehicles is an international leader in the commercial sector and are driven in over 100 countries, albeit primarily on construction sites and in bus lanes. The company is also at the forefront of developing sustainable and electric commercial transport vehicles, and they do still sell 2 passenger cars in the Philippines, the D-Max and the MUX. And it's possible that Isuzu will rise again. The D-Max BEV, or battery electric vehicle, their first EV truck, is launching in Europe in 2025, followed by Australia, Thailand, and other wonderful places to visit.
Yeah, so as the Isuzu guy of the group.
Oh,
do you feel that
title automatically.
Do you feel affinity with them like you do a Subaru? Or?
No, because most of the reason why I am an Isuzu guy at the moment is because of the wedge-shaped design,
and
which is all Giorgetto. And
Tiny George.
Yeah, and it's
Tiny George.
The way I look at it, because I like unique vehicles. And the reason for that is because I'm an identical twin. I don't want to be like anyone else because I constantly have someone that's exactly like me at all times.
I get that.
A little peek into Justin's psyche.
Yes. So I bought the Impulse because within inches, it's the exact same as an A86.
Yeah.
Almost exactly the same. Just a little heavier.
It's rear wheel.
Rear wheel drive.
Yeah.
So there's 2 gen Impulses. There's the first gen Impulse, which is what I have, which is rear wheel drive. Then there's the second gen Impulse, which was essentially a Geo Storm. I don't feel any affinity towards them. I do like the things that they made. They're creative and unique. The Viacross is low on my list, but maybe one day. I don't know.
I was a hater of them for a while, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm kind of coming around on it.
Yeah. Well, because now everything's a crossover.
I know.
And now, like, oh, wait, this is the OG. It's literally in the name.
It's the weird, like, plastic cladding belt line.
But that now gets me. You can't not have plastic cladding.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, let me get this bulbous, cute vampire.
Yeah.
Bulbous. Look at that bulbous.
So we do have some listener mail this week.
All right.
This is from Moist Goose, which I hate that name. I'm sorry. Been listening since Ford v Ferrari and been watching the channel when Up to Speed was popular. Love you guys. In episode 232 of Past Gas, y'all say that you have driven the cars in the show The Office.
Oh yeah, I was here for that. Yeah.
Whoa.
I still want to make that video. We drive all the cars from the office because they had some cool cars. You had the Firebird. You had the
PT Cruiser.
The PT Cruiser.
Oh, yeah.
You had the
Subaru. Jim has a Subaru.
Well, it was
the Subaru. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's right.
But I wonder if you take account of season one, episode one, when Dwight says he drives a 240Z. I know Joe has a Z, but I'm not sure which one it is. It's a Z31, 1984. I guess that would make it third generation. Anyways, you guys are awesome, and I always look forward to hearing you every Monday and now Wednesday on the Big Three. Steven from Houston, Texas. Thank you, Steven, for writing in.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah.
240Z.
Yeah, 240Z. So
since we never see it though.
Yep. Well, I know a guy who has a 240 and a 280. So
all right, we'll my just eyes twitching. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. On that note, thank you for watching. Follow our guys, Nolan J. Sykes on Instagram, Justin Freeman with two A's, and I'm Joe G. Weber. Big thanks to our crew, Audrey Holden, Gavin Kinsel, and our writer this week, Sam Klemmer. Go check out our merch at donutmedia.com, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.